sahanau bhunaktu sabiryan karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastuma vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shloka 5 Ayin Nandana Tanuja Kinkaram Patitam Mam Vishwame Bhavam Buddho Kripaya Tavapara Pankaja Stitiduli Sadrisham Vichintaya. O my Lord, O Krishna, son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant. Because of my own fruitive acts, I have fallen in this horrible ocean of nescience. Now please be causelessly merciful to me. Consider me a particle of dust at your lotus feet. Shisan Modana Bhasyam. It is proper for a sadhaka who has taken shelter of the holy name to be excessively concerned about the material... Oh, is it? Is it proper for a sadhaka who has taken shelter of the holy name to be excessively concerned about the material miseries inflicted upon him? To answer this question, Lord Chaitanya composed this shloka, in which he illuminates the correct attitude of a devotee, thusly. O Lord Krishna, son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant. But now, as a result of my previous activities, I have fallen into this terrible ocean of material existence. Lust, greed, anger, and envy are my adversaries. They lurk in the waters like big fish to swallow me up. The rough waves of wasted hopes and anxieties are tossing me here and there, making my life miserable, lashing gales of bad association and further suffering. In this condition, I see you as my only shelter. Karma Gyan and yoga are like seaweed. Occasionally, a small bunch of seaweed can be seen floating by. These are the weeds of karma, gyan, and yoga, tapasya, and so on. Has anyone ever crossed this ocean of nescience by grasping these paltry weeds? All I have ever seen is that some persons, while trying to swim across this ocean, have reached out to hold these weeds for support, only to sink, seaweed and all, like dead weights. There is no other hope for safety other than your unlimited mercy. The sturdy vessel of your holy name is the only means to cross over this dangerous ocean of material existence. Knowing this too well, I have acted. I begged passage aboard the ship of the Lord's holy name for my spiritual master. By his causeless mercy, it was awarded. O Lord, you are known as the protector of your devotees who are souls surrendered to your lotus feet. Please accept this homeless destitute. Cleanse me of all my faults and consider me a dust particle at your lotus feet. The message of the sloka is that those who have been accepted by the Lord on the path of bhakti should never return to the ways of sense enjoyment and liberation, despite material difficulties. Prabhupada mentioned about like all this new age kind of stuff, that he was saying that if one is not a devotee, then actually it's quite a good thing. It's you could say the persons are more aware, more conscious of a broader amount of things, more attuned to subtleties, metaphysics, something behind, something higher, some higher purposes, some concept of moving forward. Like this. So he says that's good. If they are in touch with these things and they haven't come in contact with Krishna consciousness, nice. So then it's progressive. Then taking up devotional service, then we'll move farther forward. But if one is in devotional service and then steps back into these things, there's basically absolutely no credit due. It sounds nice, it sounds great, they have great language, very flowery, you know, like this. Unfortunately, not the words of the Vedas, but flowery nonetheless. Sounds nice, sounds good, but still people are suffering. Still, they are not able to cross the material ocean. This is the difficulty. It says, here that they'll sink, you know, seaweed and all. So the karma, the jnana, the yoga, the tapasya, whatever it is that they take up, they will sink. So the only thing, so that's why this example is given. It's not that there's just a little bit of a problem, you know, one's in the fallen into the swimming pool in your backyard. This is an ocean. You're in the middle of this ocean. You don't get out of the ocean by swimming. No one does that. It just doesn't happen. You know, people, we've heard of people, you know, with lots of rigorous training, they can cross the English Channel, right? But that's not out in the middle of the ocean. It's quite big, but it's not out in the middle of the ocean, right? Plus, when they go, they have people with boats and helicopters and this and that, all kinds of things going along with them. So here is in the middle of the ocean, there's no way one will get out of it. Material existence will not be crossed. Therefore, it's only on the boat of the holy name, the sound boat of the holy name, then one is given shelter by the grace of the spiritual master. By his grace, then one is able to get on this boat, right? And then stay on this boat. That will get one across. Does that make sense? So, therefore, we see the element of very great humility here, because we see as it's Krishna's compassion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the last verse, was mentioning that Krishna is dealing or interacting with the devotees or with the living entities because of compassion. Right? So here then, based on that, his compassionate mood, we are taking shelter of that. That then gives us whatever we need, whatever we require. Right? Because then one gets a place within the spiritual context, within the spiritual world. Right? Does this make sense? Like that? So these are the attitudes, you know, of the devotee. These need to be studied, need to be thought of. Other things will not work. There are no other solutions. One can try, but as we've seen, it's not successful. It's just not successful. Right? This ocean of material nations is not being crossed. It sounds nice. It sounds great. But it's not happening. That's the fact. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing this out. So it's just by considering oneself a dust, a particle of dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. Okay, and so that's despite difficulties, because difficulties will come. We've gotten ourselves into this ocean through our previous activities, and the results of those previous activities may still be coming. What is there, what we've done, that we don't know, you know. So many things may come. The point is we're now performing devotional activities, which will take us back to Godhead. It's not, I perform the activity now all my karma has to stop. It's not that easy. It's not that simple, right? We've done nonsense for so long like that. We've gone out, you know, we've done so much, you know, broken all the rules, done whatever we can, and then when the police catch us, then we go, oh, I'm sorry. And then we expect now everything will be fine. You understand? No, we take up devotional service, and it's a separate thing. There's two things going on simultaneously. Whatever is there due to us in the material world, that's coming. Whatever. But going back to Godhead, then that's a separate thing. Right? By taking that up, then whatever's happening in the material existence doesn't bother us. Right? So if it bothers us, then we're still not that well situated in devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. If you're in a room with the AC on, it doesn't mean all the heat outside's gone away. It's still there. It just doesn't bother you. Does that make sense? So Lord Chaitanya, then he's quoting from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 20, 31, 33, 34. In great humility, considering himself a conditioned soul of the material world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again expressed his desire to be endowed with service to the Lord. I am your eternal servant, but I forgot your lordship. Now I have fallen in the ocean of neshas and have been conditioned by the external energy. Be causelessly merciful to me by giving me a place with the particles of dust at your lotus feet, so that I may engage in the service of your of your lordship as your eternal servant. Notice that the term is always used, Prabhupada always uses it consistently, causeless mercy. Causeless means there's no cause for it. There's no, we can't say, I deserved it. Oh yes, I was the seeker, I was looking, that's why I came to Krishna consciousness. Many times they ask about how they came to Krishna consciousness and that. And we find that, you know, there's general of this or that, but you also find the one where, yes, I was a jnani, you know, a Krishna, I was a true seeker and I was looking, therefore I came in contact. But then that's saying our endeavor is the cause. Right? And if we're not, and our endeavor before bhakti was not bhakti. So how could that be the cause? You know what I'm saying? If you're practicing devotional service, then you can say devotional service is the cause of one's benefit. If one's not practicing devotional service, karma and jnana will not give you bhakti. So it's causeless mercy. By the grace of Krishna, by the grace of the spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, then we're picked up. Does this make sense? You had a question? Now, commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Lord Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, is the object of everyone's devotion. Servitorship to Lord Krishna is inseparable from the identity or swarup of the spirit soul. Right? It means the servitorship is just, it's non-different, it's not like it's an option, it's just the way it is. Just like the material conditioning means we think we are the master. Right? If we don't think we're the master, how are we going to be conditioned, right? So the spiritual is we think we're servant. We know we're servant. That's just integral. It's not a separate thing. Now that servant of Krishna has become apathetic to his service and is drowning in the terrible ocean of material existence, his only hope of survival is to get the Lord's mercy. If Lord Krishna, out of his fathomless compassion, accepts the jiva, placing him as a pollen particle at his lotus feet, then his sudden hidden identity and eternal proclivity will be re-manifest. The word padaduli, lotus feet dust, used here further substantiates the jiva's original identity as the infinitesimal part and parcel of Krishna, as stated in the scriptures. The jiva may intensely desire to acquire a place at Krishna's lotus feet, but the fact is that only when he becomes subservient to Krishna's will and cultivates devotional service is he accepted by the Lord. So now he's showing that it's not that there was anything else. It says he has become apathetic to his service. Right? And then his hidden identity, eternal proclivity, will be re-manifest. Notice these particular words. Re-manifest means that it was manifest before. And he's apathetic to his service, means he had service there at Krishna, to Krishna. Does that make sense? So this idea of the jiva falling from the position of Brahman, meaning that he was never in any kind of pastime or relationship or any connection, then is not being alluded to here. Right? Otherwise, he would use different words. Right? The technical, Brahmanic explanations are very straightforward and easy. But here, it's being brought out in the point of rasa, of relationship. But he's apathetic. He's not taking it up. He's not engaged. Therefore, then he's using these terminology. So he's coming from that. He's become apathetic. He's here. And then by surrendering to Krishna, then he can be put back in that position. Right, so it's very clear, these kinds of things. Otherwise, the other is there, it's nice, but actually it's a part that's technically almost like deistic. Right? Is that the Lord, his path, the spiritual world, can't have any touch of anything, which is fine. But it's also saying is that the Lord can't have his pastimes in such a way that they're observable by others. That may have these bad qualities of the material world, these ones that were mentioned before. This, what do you call it? Lust, greed, anger, and envy. Right? Because that's the whole point. You can't fall from the spiritual world because these qualities aren't manifest there. Yes, in Goloka they're not manifest. But in Gokula they are. Right? Does that make sense? They can both be going on. You know, the eternal associates are there, and they're qualified assistants. Then they're absorbed in and serving Krishna. But there are others in Vrindavan. That are not means the husbands, the yogic Brahmins. They're not thinking of Krishna, not worried about it. They're just worried about their Vedic Karmakanda sacrifice. And they're right in Braj. They're Brahmins, Braj Brahmins. Right? Krishna walks by their house. They're living there. They're not in some like outskirts or something. They're right there. Right? Demons come right into Vrindavan. Does that make sense? So all these different elements are there. So we can understand relationship is there. We become apathetic. The other one actually makes it that, well, it's just kind of the way it is. It's a technicality. And so therefore by a technicality I'm here. You know, I lost by technicality. I wasn't actually knocked out. You know? You say I lost on technicality means, you know, I was doing okay, but somehow or another the other guy got in some more points. Does that make sense? No, you were KO'd, you know. Right? And so here we are. We ourselves, you know, voluntarily took up material consciousness. Became apathetic to our service to Krishna. That's why we're here. So we have to take responsibility for our actions and become, you know, active in trying to reestablish that relationship. And so that's based on humility. Becoming subservient to Krishna's will. Does that make sense? Like that. Then we know where the responsibility is, so we have to do it. Right? Because until we know where the responsibility lies, then we can kind of like, you know, make all kinds of philosophical things about it. It becomes a big topic. But the point is it's not a topic, it's something you have to do. Does that make sense? Like that. Because it says philosophy without religion becomes mental speculation. Right? So the religion is, I'm Krishna's eternal servant, I have to do something about it. So where's the need of speculation? But when it becomes such a speculative topic, it means that the culture of I am servant of Krishna is not the prominent element. Right? Because we can't, well, how could I have been? What would be the advantage? Wouldn't you like to think I was there, I was doing, you know, but I was, you know, stupid? You know what I'm saying? Like that. It's only due to false ego, I could have never been that stupid. Or it was arranged by someone else and this is the way it is. Yes?
What about the fear that it could happen again?
But then that's why Krishna in the Gita says what's going will never return. It's just like, will you stick your finger willingly in a fire again? You won't do it. First time you don't know, it looks interesting, it flutters around, it makes it, you know, it looks something attractive. So you can become bewildered, but once you do it and figure out that it's not such a great experience, it won't be done again. So that's the whole point, because the point is you are the same living entity. It's also the element of you're going back to Godhead, because then you're looking at the thing of why would you feel it would happen again, because then you're thinking I'm not actually in control, someone else is in control. But the element is no, you're in control of whether you want to be involved in devotional service or not. So, since you've already tried non-devotional service, once reestablishing oneself in pure unalloyed devotional service, why would one go back again? Does that make sense? So, the whole thing together then makes sense. But otherwise, it's always this thing that I'm the victim, I'm the this, I'm the that, and so many. So, therefore, you know, what if it happens again? I'm not in control. But actually, we made our own decisions. Like that. So we take responsibility and we do something about it. That's all. We just put ourselves under Krishna's will. Is that okay? This shloka indicates anartha nivritti. Until he is fully situated in his swarup, a residue of anarthas cling to his heart. Thus, his ultimate perfection and goal remains hidden by these slight impurities. Sambandha Gyan makes him eligible to chant the holy name purely and render loving devotional service by clearing these anarthas from his heart. This is called anartha nivritti. At this stage of development, the devotee is known as Jatarati, born of Rati or love. The difference between Ajatarati Sadaka, not born of Rati, and Jatarati devotee is all in the quality of chanting. One cannot be accepted as Jatarati devotee on the basis of pretense. Right? So in other words, if one is situated on the platform of Bhava or not. So Sanartha Nivritti, Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha Gyan means you know who Krishna is, who you is, and what your relationship with the material world is. So here we see that that's very, very nicely explained. Right? Does that make sense? Very nicely explained. So you know what your position is, Krishna's position as his servant, and that this material world is not a nice place. Right? And you want to be properly situated back in Krishna's service. So then one's identity is very clear here. Right? Does that make sense? So the Sambandha Gyan becomes very clear. With that, then the Anartha Nivritti is able to progress. Right? One is able to clear the heart. Because it's all these various kinds of illusions that create the anarthas. Right? So you remove those illusions, you remove the anarthas. That makes sense. After anartha nivritti follows nairantarya, or undeviating steadiness in serving, then svecha purvika, voluntary meditation on Krishna's pastimes, by which one develops spontaneous attraction for them. And then svarasiki, the spontaneous revelation of Krishna's pastimes, even without one's expectation. Only after these three stages comes the final perfection of prema. Okay, is that so? In other words, once anartha nivritti means one is properly situated, understanding his relationship with Krishna, then he becomes steady in his devotional service, undeviating. Then from there, then he voluntarily takes up meditation on Krishna's pastimes. By which one develops spontaneous attraction. Right? Then, that having coming, so you're attracted to them, you voluntarily absorb yourself, that will bring you to the stage where they come on their own. Then from that stage, then will come prema. Does that make sense? So it's the natural, so we see absorption in Krishna is the actual method, what's going on. So absorption in the name, form, qualities, and pastimes is actually the whole process. All these other things are to convince us of that, or to see that we're properly engaged in that, or doing activities that are progressive for our devotional service. Does this make sense? Yeah. Scriptural statements relevant to this shloka. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.11.24. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, when will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes. My words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engages in the loving service of your Lordship. All right, so here's the element of becoming the servant of servant. When will I again? Right? Does that make sense? These things. May I again come to that platform? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.29.38. Therefore, O vanquisher of all distress, please show us mercy. To approach your lotus feet, we abandon our families and homes. We have no desire other than to serve you. Our hearts are burning with intense desires, generated by your beautiful smiling glances. O jewel among men, please make us your maidservants. This would be the gopis. Srila Rupa Goswami writes, if you have not worshipped the dust of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, or the land of Braja that is marked with her lotus feet, or did not serve the lotus feet of her devotee who is grave because of meditating on her, then how you become attracted to that blackish ocean of nectar known as Shyama or Krishna? So we see here is that all these verses are pointing at serving the devotees. Because that's the real key. Right? Means we see is that we start with Krishna because we're trying to be God. And then Krishna's God. So that's made prominent. But the point is that if you're going to be situated actually serving Krishna, that's done by serving the devotees, not by some other means. So as one gets closer, then one sees Krishna's devotees. Then one takes up their service, that moves you forward, because they're engaged in that service. In Vilap Kushamanjali Shloka 8, O Radharani, beloved damsel of Braja, I am exhausted from swimming in the tempestuous ocean of misery, but I am a derelict. Kindly pick me up on the infallible boat of your causeless mercy. Guide me to the wonderful sanctuary of your lotus feet. In Radharasa Shuddha Nidhi, Shloka 259, become totally absorbed in Krishna, whose crown is decorated with a peacock plume, and constantly sing his holy name and glories. Engross yourself in serving his lotus feet and continuously chant the Maha Mantra to invoke his pleasure. My only and intimate heartfelt desire is to become a slave to Srimati Radharani's lotus feet. By your causeless mercy, I may obtain spontaneous love for her service. Okay. Any other points on to be? Anything else on this? Okay. Shloka 6. Nayanam galarasru dharaya varanam gadgara rudaya gira pulaker nichitam vapu kada tavanama grahane bhavishyati. Translation, my dear Lord, when will my eyes be beautified by filling with tears that constantly glide down as I chant your holy name? When will my voice falter and the hairs on my body stand erect in transcendental happiness as I chant your holy name? Sri Sanmodana Bhasya. In the five previous shlokas, the following topics have been explained. Shraddha, Sarusanga, Bhajanakriya, Anartha, Nivriti, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, and Bhava. From the progression of the subject matter so far, we are learning how the jiva, with the assistance of pure bhakti, which is the essence of the Lord's Ladini Shakti, gradually attains his swarup. In this verse, the theme of bhava bhakti is being further elaborated upon. When the stage of bhava bhakti is obtained, pure devotional service is perfected to the point of becoming continuous and unbroken. Right? So pure devotional service starts from nishta, but it becomes perfect and unbroken right at the point of bhava. So it's already pure devotional service. So that's why then it's mentioned that the preachers, they are to be, one does not blaspheming the devotees who are preaching, because that position is actually pure devotional service, right? But it's not unbroken, you know? But that's the situation. Does that make sense? So from our neophyte position, we don't take the thing, well, unless it's perfect, it doesn't have any meaning, right? But Krishna doesn't work like that, right? The child's expression of affection is not very perfect. They just cry, maybe they smile, maybe this and that, but it's not very developed, right? Does that make sense? There's no books compiled about the baby's smile or the baby's cry, right? Books are compiled about letters or different things that people have said about others and their appreciation or their love, right? Does that make sense? Why? Because it's more developed, it's more sophisticated, it's more clear, it's more exact. But it's not that the mother doesn't consider that this is affection. Does that make sense? So when you're basing, when your relation with others is based on compassion, then whatever they do that's good, that's appreciated for what it is. Right? Then the other things aren't, those are dealt with simply because they get in the way of proper relationship. Does that make sense? You're not punished because you're doing something wrong. You're punished because you're doing something that keeps you from being situated in where you're supposed to be, where you actually are happy. You understand? Someone's done something wrong, they must be punished. What is the purpose of that? Why should it be? You know what I'm saying? What would be the reason that you figure, oh, they did this, they should be punished? For what reason? Oh, they've done something wrong, it's bad. But what's the problem? You understand? We're not dealing with anything of actual substance here. The point is something is going on that keeps them from realizing their eternal relationship with Krishna. That's the problem. So correction has to be there to put them solidly on that path of devotional service. Does that make sense? Otherwise, it's not correction, it's not punishment. It's just vindictiveness. Right? A rule has been broken, there must be punishment, because good is superior over all other things. It's the supreme truth. Right? But in our studies, we are understanding that Krishna is the supreme truth. Therefore, all other truths only have meaning if they're in line with Him. Does that make sense? Therefore, correction is based on how to bring one closer to Krishna. That's why the system of correction is different for the devotees than for the karmis. Does that make sense? Because there is the element of sambandha jnana, of the proper knowledge, proper practice, the abhideya, proper understanding of the goal. So whatever is there in the Vedic culture then is already found is already perfectly situated. Does this make sense? It's already properly situated. That proper situation then makes it that, therefore, it's a matter of reminding one of the one's actual position, or clearing the obstacles that keep one from being there, or somehow or another assisting one to get on that platform. It's not that something's gone wrong, therefore one's punished, and you call that devotional service. What has it got to do with devotional service? Right? So, because why devotional service is to please Krishna. You do something that's not correct, that means it doesn't please Krishna. So, correction is for what? You know what I'm saying? We have to remember, what kind of God is Krishna? Understand? He's not a Christian God. Right? He's not Norse. He's not Greek. Understand? He's the Supreme Lord. Therefore, out of compassion, then if someone identifies with the material nature so much and completely forgets Him, then we see results are quite strong, with the idea that you will drop your faith in material nature, not in Him. But sometimes living entities are so determined that when things go bad materially, if they're doing anything that they consider spiritual, if it doesn't suddenly immediately go right, then it's God's fault. But that means that they're not actually that sincere. So then Krishna gives them that, you know, faith and material in something else and takes them away from themselves. Does that make sense? Are we distinguishing here? We can tell the difference what we're talking here? What is actual devotional service and what is actual mundane, good and bad? So the point is good and bad is based on does it please Krishna or not. If Krishna is not pleased, then you should be put into a position where you are pleasing Krishna. Right? That's why we would see that Srila Prabhupada, when things would go wrong in a devotee's life, he would then be put into a situation in which he could be fully engaged in Krishna's service. that make sense?
That would be the position. Something that would be purifying, or something that would make him aware, and something that would allow for full engagement. But this other is that, no, then you can't do all these other things eternally. What does it have to do anything with devotional service? One may say, oh, you know, for the karmi. What do the karmis know? Something happens here in Mayapur. Where are the karmis that are worried about it? Where are they? Where are they pointing their fingers? Where is it hitting the front pages of the New York Times? You know what I'm saying? It's not even in the sun. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, what is it that we're talking about? It's in our own mind that we are worried about the karmi's mentality, because the karmi's mentality is of value to us. We actually think like that. Therefore, we try to apply the karmi concept on it. But that's not devotional service. One gets no credit for applying so-called devotional service like that. Does this make sense? It's very important. We may think, okay, that's there, what has it got to do with me? But why do we forgive or not forgive devotees? Based on what? Is it based on devotional service? Is it not based on devotional service? Because that's all justice, right? They're right, I'm wrong. So we apply it every day in our life. Does that make sense? So the problem is, what's not connected to Krishna? That's the problem. How it's getting in the way of you becoming Krishna conscious. That's the problem. Not because it's good or bad. Good or bad is established by Krishna for devotional service. It doesn't stand on its own. You understand? Dharma, morality, doesn't stand on its own, separate than Krishna. Dharma is established by Krishna. Morality is established by Krishna. Yes?
Could it also be that we don't have faith that there are laws, that there's a higher authority, and there are laws of nature, and there's sinful reaction, and yama, of course not for devotees, but yamaraj, that take care of these things, that we're not actually in control of giving out justice for someone that does the wrong thing, that by holding a grudge,
we're
somehow controlling.
Yeah, that could be, because therefore you feel in control, because control then creates security. So if somehow or another something's gone wrong in the relationship, you have to feel that you somehow have the control of it. So if you can, you know, not deal with them, not talk to them, this, that, then that will give you that sense of control. So that will, one, it'll strengthen your security, so your identity is in place there, because you're okay, they're the one that's wrong, so you're still okay, so you can still function. Because if there's something wrong with you, with us, then we can't function. But both of them have a problem, because we're servant of Krishna, so we're neither the, you know, chastiser or the chastised, we are servants of Krishna. You know, so that's it, the devotee. So getting that faith to just actually step out of this. We're so conditioned, we think we have to work within this. You know, it's like Prabhupada says, Narad Muni, he can fly around in the universe because he doesn't think he can't. He's not conditioned that I got to walk here and that's it. You know. But he's got a little bit more understanding than, let's say, Francis. You know, so that didn't work so good for him, his flying either. But does that make sense? Like that. Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah, so now we've dealt with this about Shraddha Sadhu Sangha, developing that faith in the first five, this is six, okay. So he's taking it back to the first one. So the first one is describing the Shraddha. The Sadhu Sangha is the Sankirtan, Bhajana Kriya there. Then it develops all these things. So all that is being discussed there. And then specifically, then we're seeing that I'm not properly situated. We take up this process. And then we become properly situated in devotional service. And then now we become, we come to this platform of bhava. So now this is taking it further in the position of bhava. can also see is, oh, because he's taking it to all of these, and Baba. So Baba's been alluded to, because in that one explanation that he gave before, the Asakti and the Baba are very much connected, like that. Because one means is that it's the voluntary absorption in the Lord's pastime, so a Baba is just the natural revelation that comes. But both are the absorption in the pastimes. Right? Voluntary meditation. Okay. Then voluntary meditation on which one develops a spontaneous attraction. So ruchi and then asakti. Then that becomes, then there's the spontaneous revelation. Symptoms of bhava. The sadhaka in bhava bhakti is marked by 9 symptoms. 1, he is anxious to utilize his time in Krishna's service and does not like to be idle. 2, he is always reserved and perseverant. 3, he is always detached from all material attraction. 4, he does not long for any material respect in return for his service. 5, he is certain of Lord Krishna's mercy. 6, he is always very eager to serve the Lord faithfully. 7, he is very attached to the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. 8, he is always eager to describe the transcendental qualities of the Lord. 9, he is very pleased to live in a place where the Lord's pastimes are performed, such as Mathura, Vrindavana, Dwarka. These symptoms become visible to a devotee when he is on the threshold of entering into full bhava. Okay, when he's on the threshold of entering into full bhava. So let's see how he's going to unfold this. So these, we can see these one could take as benchmarks, you know, as in one's development. One wants to know how one is developing in devotional service. Then one can take this. How much are we anxious to utilize our time and not like to be idle, right? How are we reserved and perseverant? How are we fixed in devotional service, absorbed in it? He's always detached from material attraction, so how much attraction is there, how much is decreasing? He does not long for any material respect in return for his service, so he performs his activities and is not looking that people will appreciate it and all that. Does that make sense? People appreciate it, then he understands, okay, things are working nicely, but he's not doing it to get that appreciation. Right? He is certain of Krishna's mercy. So he's certain that will be there. It will come. I just have to continue my service. That's the natural position. I am his servant. He is my Lord. So naturally to work. When it's up to him, it's up to his kindness. You know, when he is impressed, it will happen. If he's not impressed, it'll happen later. Right? He is 6. He's always very eager to serve the Lord faithfully. So he always wants to be properly serving with faith, not that he's doing from some other motive. Right? So it's just a faith that's always situated there. 7, he's very attached to the chanting of the holy name. So how much do we actually have attachment? How much is that taste? 8, he is always eager to describe the transcendental qualities of the Lord. How much do we want to discuss about the Lord, or how much are we interested in other varieties of nonsense? 9, he's very pleased to live in a place with the Lord's pastimes. How much he appreciates the Dham for being the Dham. Not just, it's out of the way, you know, the children don't have to worry about they're going to get mugged or, you know, something like that at school. Hey, it's a lot cheaper in India. What it costs, what I've spent in a month in the West, I can live for practically a year in India. You know, those aren't the reasons he's pleased to live in the Dham. Right? Does that make sense? Oh, hey, and there's a school here, right? Okay, so. Some place to put the kids. Okay? You understand? So it's a matter of it's more. Is that the Dham itself is special. You want to be here. You want to be able to serve the Dham. You want your family to get the benefits of living in the Dham. Then everything else comes on the side. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of what is the motive? Like that. As previously indicated, when sadhana bhakti is infused with ruchi, or the intense desire to obtain the Lord's lotus feet. It's nice when you read these various things because then you get different perspectives. Ruchi technically means taste. Right? But he also called it before. It also had the name Svecha Purvika, right? So voluntary meditation. So voluntary meditation. Why? You voluntarily meditate on something you have a taste for, right? And then it says the intense desire to attain the Lord's lotus feet. So you want to attain. So therefore, there's a taste for it. And when there's a taste for it, you want to further it, right? So they nourish each other, which softens and melts the heart, this intense desire. Such sadhana bhakti is then known as bhava bhakti. That bhava consists of the rays of the sun of prema and the rays of the sun of Krishna's matchless transcendental beauty. Because the beauty is considered the first of all the opulences. Right? From there, all the other opulences come. Right? So when that intense desire is there to serve the Lord, that softens and melts the heart. That brings one to bhava. You understand? That's what the actual, what's going on. Therefore, it is concluded that bhava bhakti, or rati, is the dawning of prema. Prema in its very initial stage can be called bhava. And in this stage, the eight ecstatic symptoms, astika, sattvika, vikara, like crying, horripilating, etc., begin to slightly manifest. When meditating on the Lord's lotus feet, the heart melts and profuse tears stream out spontaneously. Descriptions of such ecstasies are found in the Vaishnav Tantra Shastras and the Puranas, which confirm that the ecstatic symptoms that are manifest in prema with full intensity take a shy but firm appearance in the stage known as bhava. Right? In other words, it's comparison is like a bud. It's the beginning stages of prema, but it hasn't like fully manifest. So it's just something is there. So here he uses the term shy, right? It's not so strong, it's not so bold. The scriptures list many bodily symptoms of bhava under the heading anubhava, which include dancing, rolling in the dust, singing loudly, stretching the body, making out loud outbursts, yawning, breathing heavily, ignoring outsiders, drooling, laughing like a madman, wheeling the head and belching. Notice a lot of these things are really politically incorrect. So if political correctness is really what your ultimate goal is, then one should not read any further like that, because it just starts to go politically, you know, correctness goes downhill from here. As mentioned, there are eight major ecstatic symptoms called astika, sattvika, vikara. I'm not sure this is not supposed to be vichar, but no, maybe vikara. These are paralysis, perspiration, horripilation, pallor, choked voice, trembling, weeping, and swooning. If these, dancing, singing, crying, horripilating, and choked voice, are particularly prominent in the stage of bhava, I think it's supposed to be these, or whatever. In this shloka, we find the Supreme Teacher, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, has taken these symptoms into special account. He prays, O Krishna, O son of Maharaj Nanda, when will my eyes be decorated with tears of love when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up with these ecstatic emotions? When will my body be filled with horripilations? O Lord, be merciful that these ecstatic symptoms may soon decorate my body at the time of chanting your name. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Antilila 20:37. Without love of Godhead, my life is useless. Therefore, I pray that you accept me as your servant and give me the salary of ecstatic love of Godhead. Right? So that I become the servant, and then the only payment we're asking is ecstatic love of Godhead. Right? Make sense? Commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. O Lord Krishna, enjoyer of the gopis, when will the eyes of this gopi brim over with cascading tears at the recitation of your name? When will my voice choke up with love and my body tingle with horripilation? This is a perfect example of a prayer of love for Krishna. In the context of this verse, another verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu may be cited for consideration. O Lord Pundarikaksha, while chanting your holy name with tears in my eyes, when shall I dance in ecstasy on the bank of the Jamuna? Brahma Samhita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.156. Okay. Not going to make it past this. Okay. So we'll start on Thursday from here with the commentary, then we'll go on to 7. In other words, these are going to be very technical on the platform of what's happening in Bhava and Prema, like that. So it's there we, for understanding, we know what we're dealing with. Otherwise, in our day-to-day life, so many times just what's going on exactly with us takes all prominence, and then, you know, where we're trying to get to becomes very far away. But then this brings it, you know, into a perspective that all this is there, and so all the little minor things going on in our life are actually very small in comparison to actually where we're trying to get to. Yes? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi. Yeah.